Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Super Rugby Aotearoa and AU review. Yes, we've completed round 9 of Super Rugby Aotearoa and round, round 6 of Super Rugby AU this weekend. Yet 4 clashes and you've got to say some wonderful rugby and some upsets as well. Get definitely some results that none of us saw coming. And so we'll get into all of the action. As you can see, it's just me, myself, and I. Well, I have got a beer with me as well, no guests so far this evening. Hopefully I'll be joined by someone arriving late, let's see how it all goes. We kicked off on Friday night with a wet game between the Rebels and the Brumbies. Now, as soon as I saw it was a wet game, I'll be honest, I had sudden flashbacks to watching the Rebels and the Reds, I think it was that way around, earlier in the season. And boy, oh boy, that was a horrible game. 6-0 at halftime. We went into super time, which involved just being kicked back. And that was the 18-all draw on a wet day. So I must admit, I started off thinking, oh my word, this is going to be horrible. But luckily, I was surprised and it was much better than that one. Now, I do have a guest who is joining me. He has popped on. We'll see if he actually saw this game or not, because I'm not sure how much rugby he has seen this weekend. But good evening, Osred.
I couldn't leave you by yourself.
Absolutely not. I've got to have Rob to step in and talk while I'm drinking.
as Rolf Harris would just say, you know, do you think I would leave you crying when there's room on my horse for two?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure anyone would go on a horse with Rolf Harris, to be honest with you. I've heard that
Coming back to your original question, no, I didn't see this game.
Brilliant. Okay, that's good. So take it back to seat, have a beer.
I'll just disappear again.
Yes, exactly. This one was a wet one. And good evening, everyone who's in the live chat, by the way. Thank you for joining us. It's good to have you along. You can join us, by the way, on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube here on New Zealand Sports Radio. I'll be honest with you, folks. Our favorite place to have you is our Facebook page. We really are trying to grow that up to try to hit that 10,000 followers mark. We're just over 1,000 at the moment. So got some way to go there. So if you could head over to the Facebook page and give it a like and a follow, that would be much appreciated. So, wet weather game, especially with one of those teams who, well, I had a quick look back at my notes from the previous wet game. It was like, oh, thank goodness, someone's actually kicked posts at last. But no, this first half was fantastic by particularly by the Rebels, who came out really dominated this first half. It was 27-7 at halftime. Just on halftime, the Brumbies got a yellow card as well. So, it was all Rebels up to that point. Now, you'll hear a lot of us, a lot of the time when you talk to coaches stuff. You'll see that we are, what's the word? You'll see them talk about, oh, we didn't have enough hustle, or yeah, we lacked physicality tonight. And they sort of run out those kind of cliches. But this first half really was one of those where the Rebels just wanted the ball more than the Brumbies did. And they chased and hustled to get the ball first. And by getting that football first, that's really how they won this one. Hodge picked up a couple of tries. Now, Hodge is a really underrated try scorer. A lot of people would normally say, oh, yeah, Corbetti, he's a try scoring machine. No, Hodge scores at a quicker rate than Corbetti does. He's a very underrated guy. He has a nose for finding that try line. He just doesn't know how to wear a single shirt all the time, and keeps changing the numbers on the back. But he's a very good try scorer. He's actually scoring at a faster rate than Israel Folau, who is a top try scorer in Super Rugby of all time. But Ashwin, before I carry on this one, Nocturnal Rights wants to know, are you okay?
I just responded to him in the old chat room. Yeah, no, I'm fine. I was just like, as Paul alluded to, I haven't seen this game, so I'm not going to be able to add a lot of value to it, apart from adding that, yeah, Reece Hodge is an underrated player.
He is. And also, Ashwin, with your deep tactical analysis.
Deep undercover.
What are the Brumbies known for?
Getting a penalty, kicking to the corner, and doing a rolling maul, and their number two, Sia Fainga, scores a try off the back
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. Now, that relies on one of those things happening, doesn't it? Which is winning your line out.
Whoa. You're gonna tell me news alert, they didn't win line outs.
They lost five lineouts at the out of 21, 76%. And when, as you say, your primary weapon is kick to the corner, line out, maul, try. When the opposition get up and steal your line out 5 meters out, that's not a good sign.
I think, you know, interesting, something that I can comment on is that teams trying to defend the Brumbies rolling maul are pretty much up against it. I think 99 times out of 100, the Brumbies are going to convert that that rolling maul into a try. So the best thing you can do is actually try and compete against the line out. And by the sounds of it, that's what the Force did.
Yeah, they did. Not every time, but they mixed it up, which meant that, again, the Brumbies didn't know what they were going to be up against, which meant that, again, more confusion, more lost line outs. They had the strongest scrum, which was good. And yes, Matt Tamua was good in the wet. But actually, what was good about this game is that the surface held up. And whilst the Rebel and the which meant that, look, if you've got a good surface and you've got a good ball, then you can definitely play rugby. And that's what the Rebels did. The Rebels actually tried to play rugby, were much more positive, in their style, used much more width. I mean, the Brumbies at one point had more runs than they had passes. Now they did improve that in the second half. In the first half, it literally just was pick and go, and they were so narrow. The Rebels knew that all they had to do was just stand, make their tackles, stay connected inside, and the Brumbies weren't going to do anything against them. So really good result by the Rebels there. Finished 30-7. Awesome. They only got one penalty in the second half. Sorry?
Was it Rebels or Force that played the Brumbies?
Rebels, sorry. Did I say Force?
No, you said Rebels. I thought it was the Force.
Yeah. No, Rebels.
I'm just trying to confuse you.
Thank you. Phew. the Rebels only got one penalty in the second half, but they kept the Brumbies out the entire time, kept them at arm's length, and won the game comfortably, which was a big surprise. Let's be honest, the Brumbies are the best team in Australia. Everyone has them down to win rugby AU, Australian Rugby AU, and they had been undefeated up until this point. So good performance by the Rebels.
Can we say that the Brumbies are the best team in rugby gold, Super Rugby gold, only if they get penalties? Because at the end of the day, if they don't get penalties, as we're going back to just a few seconds ago, if they don't get penalties, really, what have they got?
Yes, but they are just so good at it.
Getting penalties?
Yes.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? It's like, really, and we've seen teams do this, is that you can actually play the game of rugby without offending. And so I remember one time at band camp, a Blues game at North Harbour against the Stormers, and the Blues were only ahead, it was like 2 minutes left on the clock, something like that. There's only a couple of points in it, so a penalty would have won the game for the Stormers. So the Blues were a metre behind the ruck, right? And then they're rushing up, and they shut down the Storm. Stormers went nowhere. So it can be done. You can play the game of rugby without giving penalties away.
And the Brumbies in this game, 21 turnovers. It's a 12 by the Rebels. Look, the Brumbies also do have a tendency to cough up the ball. So you don't have to compete at the ruck either and get yourself to give away ruck penalties. But even so, Rebels still gave up 15 penalties in this one to the Brumbies, 13. It wasn't because the Rebels were clean and clinical as such on the discipline side of things that they won that one. So congratulations to the Rebels, really. I've had the Rebels down as the second best team in rugby, Super Rugby AU. I know Cornflake has had the Reds down as that second best team. So, yes, I was well chuffed to see the Rebels get the result there, even if I did lose my $3 that was on this one. Moving on then to Saturday night. Arshin, you've seen this one.
I've seen this one.
Do you want to give us a quick lowdown on the Hurricanes versus the Chiefs then?
Oh, I won't say give you a quick lowdown. You're the notes man, but...
I've got the notes here.
You've got the notes there. No, look, I mean, actually, it was an interesting game. Just you know, it seemed a bit flat. It didn't seem to have the intensity that the other games have had, and by the sounds of it, today's game had sort of like it. Yeah, I mean, I watched it, and I didn't sort of drift off or anything, but it didn't seem to have that intensity or level of intensity to it that the other Super Rugby games have had.
Yeah, I mean, I arrived late because I had car troubles on the way back from Auckland after covering some Auckland club rugby. So I missed the first sort of 15 or so minutes. I missed the opening try. I did find it hard to get into this one, as you say.
You look at the if you look at the beginning of the match, and it felt like the Chiefs had basically just got off the bus and put their jerseys on and turned up. It didn't really look like there was no level of intensity in their game, defense, attack, or otherwise. And I think it looked like the Hurricanes were going to sort of like pretty much romp home. But then, yeah, I don't know. It's just things. I don't know. There was a bit of a nothing game, really. The Hurricanes didn't run away with it, and the Chiefs, I suppose, you wouldn't say lifted, but they did get themselves back into the game.
Yeah, I mean, so 12-3 at halftime, with Van Wyk a yellow card in the bin, which allowed the Chiefs to get a try after half time with Wainui diving over in the corner where Van Wyk probably would have been defending. So that closed it up during that yellow card time to 12-10. The Hurricanes did enough to keep the Chiefs at bay, right? The Chiefs were kind of in it, but you never felt like they were going to win it.
Absolutely. But I think you've put that comment up by old Nocturnal about the Chiefs have lost their attacking mojo. And it's absolutely right. Actually, the forwards don't do a bad job. If we go back to not just last night's game for the Chiefs, but previous games, the forwards are actually, you know, and the fact that we know how many injuries they've got in the forward pack, but they're still, apart from their second row, they're not turning out a bad side. And even their second row, it's just because they're young, right? So they're actually doing quite well. Their backs are just atrocious. I don't understand why they keep selecting Stevenson. He just seems totally unenthused about being on the paddock and lethargic. Yesterday's game was a classic example of Stevenson really not looking interested. And at halftime, Waisaki Naholo's brother came on, Kinney.
He did, and then went off very soon afterwards with a leg injury.
I missed it, sorry.
So, yes, came on at halftime and was off the pitch before around about 55 minutes, 54 minutes. So he only lasted less than a quarter of an hour, unfortunately. And you've got the Kinny Naholo, someone I've really kind of was hoping would not get injured. When I was down in New Plymouth, he plays for Taranaki. I saw him play in a preseason game, and then watched him hobble around for the rest of the season in a moon boot. And unfortunately, he's done that for the past two seasons, which is a real shame for him. Yeah, seems to be a guy that that does pick up injuries, leg injuries in particular, in this. Some talk about some Saracens players coming down to play for the Chiefs next season. I'm not sure I can see that really happening, to be honest. Hopefully we'll see. I expect them to stay playing in the Championship up in England.
But it's exciting, isn't it? If they did, I mean, it would sort of not turn global rugby on its head, but it would add a nice dynamic to it. And the fact of getting internationals down into the Super Rugby competition, and I sort of think, to add another level, take it next level, to add say two or three international players per squad, adds another level of excitement to it, I feel.
I would do. And look, the guys are talking about that could come down. They're not only English internationals, but the British and Irish Lions. And they're test animals. I mean, we're talking players like Itoje, Vunipolas, Owen Farrell. We're not talking bit parts internationals either. I guess part of the problem that I think a lot of people down here in New Zealand just won't realise or maybe even care about is the whole Saracen salary scandal and the fact that these players have really showed absolutely no contrition at all. Their club did anything wrong.
Their club did anything wrong. I mean, they're probably just, they're happy they're cashing their checks, aren't they? I mean, they got the contract. They got it wasn't their fault per se, really, that the club's gone and cheated the rules gone outside the rules. They put a figure out there and the club goes, yeah, here you go.
Well, no, there was. Well, they had interesting business relationships with the owner of the club, which is where they went over the salary cap, not the actual contract. So anyway, it's a bit more technical than that. And they're kind of like, we've done nothing wrong. We deserve the money. It's a short career. There's a bunch of baggage around these players that colours my view. I'll be honest. But anyway, moving on to the rugby that actually has played and that we should be talking about. Emanga Jensen, yes, over the last couple of weeks, really has stood up.
On fire.
Is playing very, very well. Big boy, got some power, and also got some nice touches as well. He's able to pass the ball.
Umanga Jensen was talked up when he first came on the scene and really didn't deliver anything. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay. Just another guy that sort of like everybody talked up. But no, he's, I'd say probably in the last 3 weeks, is it? If not four, he's been on a different level to what he's previously played at. And he's providing, I mean, a lot of those Hurricanes backs are really sort of adding their touches. So it's not just Peter and Umanga Jensen that's sort of getting the Hurricanes back line going forward. You'd say, the other guys are as well. But, yeah, he's definitely putting his stamp on the games that he's playing in.
Yeah, I mean, and another player that I think has come of age this season is Jordy Barrett. There were some suggestions in commentary, look, coming out of the shadow with his brother. Yeah, there's possibly an element of that. I think it's much more the fact that, actually, he's matured, has got a two or three years under his belt. and he's learning how to play rugby at this level.
He's in one position. He's not playing here. He's not playing there. He's not going into that. He's playing one position and getting that chance to cement it. And I think it's paying dividends for the Hurricanes.
So, yeah, absolutely. Aaron says, does two standout games, and we're talking about back to Emmanuel Jensen here, not Geordie Barrett, make you an instant All Black? No, it does not make you an instant All Black, but it does put you...
Just add water.
you've got to say now, if we're looking at the midfield stocks, obviously Goodhue, Antoinette Brown, a lot of people will talk about some, obviously Lau Mappe, Rico Iwani is playing in the centres as well. But Peter Magnus Jensen's performances in these last 2 weeks have put him into that class of player. But the thing is, yeah, you can't just keep doing it for the odd game. You've got to show consistency for yourself.
Effectively, what you're saying is that so he's shown it for the last 2-3 weeks. He's now got to do a season of it, and then he'll be considered for the All Blacks.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is brought into the All Blacks squad to experience the environment. But not into the match day squad.
No, absolutely. I just wanted to go back. Steve mentioned the effect of Luke Jacobson and Takeaho coming back. He's been there in the squad, but Jacobson coming back from injury, he had a great game, really. I mean, once the Chiefs forward started to actually get into the game a bit, I thought Jacobson, he had a couple of steals as well, and just all-round work around the field was just fantastic.
He was good around the field. Somersoni also had a decent game as well. That was the other person Stephen mentioned.
Yeah, Stephen, the other guy that comes on the show every now and then. And look, obviously one thing that I can't remember if we actually talked about it off air or on air, but he's had issues with his throwing into the lineup, but he was pretty pinpoint on Saturday night.
Yes. Yep. True.
Yeah.
Just checking time. Yep. We've got plenty of time. Good. Question marks around the dual playmaker role. And do you reckon that Jordan or Geordie Barrett for fullback? Well, sorry, folks, but at the moment, I would say it's Damon McKenzie's or Bowden Barrett. I mean, there's a lot of options there. Because Mwanga has been playing very good at 10. It's going to be hard to break in to that piece, but I do expect them to want to have somebody at fullback who can step into first receiver in the way that Geordie Barrett and Damon McKenzie do. And also Bowden Barrett, for that matter. So, yeah, you're going to say Jordan, amazing player, Will Jordan, but will be a big question mark as to how does he get into the side? Could he be a bit David Havili, who looks fantastic at Super Rugby, but doesn't seem to get a look in at the All Blacks level?
He's had the odd game, isn't he? But not anything permanent.
Yep.
And this is there's a log jam there. There's a log jam in a few positions, really. And at the end of the day, even with Richie Moanga playing as well as he has, and, he's obviously the form first five, doesn't mean that's guaranteed that the All Black selectors will pick him as their first choice number 10.
No, it doesn't. No. The two playmaker role was very much an Ian Foster thing, or it came across as being very much an Ian Foster thing. So there is no reason to see that the All Blacks would move away from that. Talking about Chiefs, aren't we? That's good. Yeah, Lachlan Bashir has had a good season. Yep, got to say.
I'm assuming he was injured last night.
I assume so.
Yeah, because he wasn't, obviously, wasn't even on the bench. So I put it out on Twitter, Will, but nobody seemed to respond. But I'm not sure. I didn't hear anything during the week or what happened. So I'm assuming that he was injured.
Yep.
Because he'd be one of the first players picked, wouldn't he? For the Chiefs at the moment, his form is outstanding. I mean, on a team that's struggling.
But again, Karpik's had a decent season. Luke Jacobson just come back from injury. So you got Sam Kane, Soakula. Again, there's depth there. So apparently, yes, apparently he was rested.
Oh, he's rested?
As for their last game of the season. So there you go.
I mean, you know, look, that actually goes back to a few strange decisions for my mind that the Chiefs have made. And, yeah, to rest him for the last game of the season when he's probably been your player, their player of the season, that's just bizarre, especially when you're trying to pick up one win out of, you know, when you're on a losing trot and you want to pick up a win. The Stevenson one that I mentioned before, starting with Stevens, he needed to go not to the bench, but back to the squad a few weeks ago. So, yeah, I think there's been some interesting selections from the Chiefs.
For Solomon Alamalo, who's obviously out injured with his dislocated shoulder.
Yep.
That's the reason that Sean Stevenson's been playing. And I think the other thing we've seen from this Chiefs side that actually we didn't haven't mentioned is as you say, they were going for a win. I think they were overplaying. Players were just trying too hard.
Too hard.
And not doing the simple thing well, but trying to say, I can do it. Yep.
You saw it in this game again, actually. I mean, it's interesting we're focusing on the Chiefs here and as opposed to the Hurricanes, but you saw it again this week. Is the fact is that the back line in particular, it's just like there's players that are unmarked outside, and the guy inside tries to be the miracle man and bust open the line when all he has to do is pass it, and it's a 3-on-1 overlap. So, you know, absolutely what you just said. There's this guy's just basically trying to win the game by themselves. And, you know, and unfortunately for them, D-Mac was one of them, really. He has been.
There was definitely one thing where I think he's going to try and get on the outside of that guy, and he's going to eat up all of the space for Sean Wainua.
So, you know, look, pick the errors in that play, and then we know which one you're talking about. He's running sideways. He's, as you say, he's trying to gas the guys around the outside. It's not going to work. And then on the other hand, what's Wainui doing running himself into touch? And this is like, hello, he should have been running either an inside line that the Damien McKenzie could have fed him, and the defensive line's going drifting towards the sideline. So it would have been hard for them to change their angle to stop Stevenson cutting back. Or he could have cut behind McKenzie and taken the ball inside. You know, options. And he runs himself into touch. Damien McKenzie runs it. You know, that was Keystone Cops type material. And it's basically sums up the Chiefs season for their back line. Because as I say, I don't think that the forwards have done too badly. It's basically the ball that they've given out to the backs has been squandered.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, next season for them with Clayton McMillan, the current Bay of Plenty head coach, coming in to fill in for Gats as Gats heads off to the Lions Tour on the assumption that the British and Irish Lions Tour happens to South Africa.
And he has stated that he'll come back if it doesn't go ahead, the British and Irish Lions Tour. He has stated he'll come back and go coach for free next year.
Which I'm sure Clayton McMillan's like, no, go away.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing. It's just like, you either come back as in the Gatland position, you come back as the head coach. You don't really want to, the head coach wouldn't really want him in the background, because are you really the head coach, or really he's pulling the strings?
Yeah. There's a question there about, Mr. Is it Laney?
Lane.
I'll be putting out my predictions, written predictions tomorrow on nzsportsradio.com. So look out for those there. There will be behind a paywall for supporters of New Zealand Sports Radio. We are an independent media organisation. Can we call us an organisation, Arshin?
Upsell.
Yes, there's four of us. There's four or five of us, and I organise it all over Google Docs. But hey, it's an organisation, so we are an independent organisation. So if you'd like to get access to those predictions, head over to New Zealand Sports Radio, become a supporter of New Zealand Sports Radio for only, it's up to you how much, but anything from a dollar upwards a month for that. And they'll be unlocked, those predictions unlocked on Friday. Also, we'll be back at 8 p.m. on Friday previewing the weekend's game as well. So hopefully good buzz. Good buzz will not be coming if you think about the drink there. Nocturnal Rites. I know the good buzz does sponsor Bay of Plenty, but the Chiefs are sponsored by Waikato Draft, so they're not going to let good buzz come in.
Is good buzz an alcoholic beverage?
No, it's an
energy drink.
It's one of those
kombucha.
Kombucha. That's it. that has got this small bit of alcohol in it, not enough to beat an alcoholic drink.
Okay, right. Hey, look, I was just going to say, just because we should talk about the Hurricanes too, you'd have to say, you know, good amount of confidence building in that Hurricane squad. They've basically beaten the two front runners of the competition in consecutive weeks. They got the job done against the Chiefs. I thought they could have done a bit more convincing, but at the end of the day, you know, we know through sport, doesn't matter what the sport is, it's always difficult to lift yourself for teams that you know, you sort of think are underperforming and think, oh, I'm going to go out there and smash them. It's actually quite a difficult mental thing to do. So yeah, I think the Hurricanes are doing actually quite well, and
didn't know it was a drink. It is a drink, and it is a drink that sponsors his Clayton McMillan's current team. That's what, but anyway, one of the things about the Hurricanes, right, they lost their opening two games. And one of the things we talked about in those opening two games was TJ Perenara doing too much and too losing much. Control and talking too much. Yeah. Now, ever since Jordy Barrett's come back, part of the leadership, particularly of that back line, has been lifted off his shoulders. And also Dane Coles coming back as well. Those two players coming back seem to have shared that leadership around. TJ doesn't feel like he's having to do it all himself and run the whole show. They've been much more relaxed, much more settled, and have played much better. I mean, one of the things that TJ said, I think, I can't remember if it was after this game or last week, was that that Jordy Barrett's big boy, just be physical. He just told him to be physical with his first thing, and he sets the example on defense. And you're like, hang on a second, that's your fullback with his first hit sets the example on defense. That's not really what, okay, but it just shows that how having TJ there having Jordy there took some of the weight of leadership off his shoulders, and he's played a lot better as well.
And he stopped arguing as much as with the referees as he did in the first few rounds, because that was just off the chart, wasn't it, in terms of the level of chat that he was having with the referees. And at the time, I don't believe he was the captain even.
No, I think he was, because him and Dane Coles are co-captains.
Right.
So big thing there.
Yeah, so reduce the chat with the refs and focus on your own game, and it's obviously been a big factor for them. I think Gavin also mentioning Savia. Look, obviously Savia came in early. I remember he did, you know, and obviously he was just lacked game time, and it showed in his game. But once he's got that game time on, he's on now, and he's been on for a few weeks. And yeah, it's noticeable the lift in the team with him at that, with his game on.
Yep. Hazemua overtaking Dane Coles now. Not in the All Black selection, no.
Not in Hurricane selection either, because obviously Coles is still starting. So he's sort of like it. But in saying that, obviously Amua, now that he's laid off the KFC, is you know, he's adding so much coming off the bench, and you know, they can rely on a really top level player to come on with 20 or 30 to go, and know that they're not losing a hell of a lot by Dane Coles going off. Obviously, just leadership and experience.
Yep. So yes, congratulations to Hurricanes. And obviously, it came out of this thinking that knowing that they could be in with a shout of still winning the title. Dependent on the Crusaders versus Highlanders results, they did what they had to do. They got the try bonus point, it ended up being not enough. They have one more game now at home against the Highlanders. Sorry,
One thing I absolutely forgot, and I know it actually came into today's game as well, which I haven't seen, but it's just like I just couldn't get through my head why the hell the Chiefs were taking threes. It's just like The first scoring opportunity in the game was a penalty, and it was about just over 40 out, and they go for the penalty, and it's like, guys, you're not going to beat the Canes, you're not going to beat the Crusaders by taking threes. It doesn't work. You've got to score tries, right? I mean, if it's one bang out in front, on the 22, sure, take it. But reality is that these days there's certain teams that you have to score tries against, and Crusaders and Hurricanes are one of them. Two of them. And it's just like, I just could not be. So they took the first shot. They missed, hit the crossbar quite spectacularly, really, the way bang into it. Hurricanes come downfield, score a try. Like, okay. The Chiefs get a penalty, and they kick for the corner again. It's just like the Hurricanes are kicking to the corner. Their mantra is to score tries. They want to get tries. They want to get that bonus point. And you guys think you're going to beat them by getting threes? And they did the same thing the week before. It's just like they thought they were going to beat the Crusaders the week before by taking threes. It's like, yeah, look, that comes to me. That comes down to coaching. That's obviously a game plan that's been discussed before you go on the field. That's not the captaincy on the field deciding, oh, how are we going in this game, boys? What should we do? Go for the sideline or shot at goal?
I think there's a bit of a difference between the second game, and I'll talk about why when we get to it. But yes, in this one, the once you're behind, you definitely can't be taking threes. Moving on then to the Waratahs versus the Reds. The Waratahs took a week off. They got abducted by aliens and replaced by an entirely new team, and absolutely thumped the Reds. Playing at the SCG, they were talking about a cricket score, and I was just praying, I tweeted this out, that actually allow the Queens and Reds to get 10 points exactly and we could have a proper cricket score. In the end, unfortunately the Reds made the conversion after 18 minutes.
We had a cricket score for about a minute.
We did.
Well, before the conversion was being taken.
But it was kind of amusing that after about, I think it was probably about 23 or 26 minutes, I had a quick check on the TAB. And they'd already stopped taking bets on the Tars to win the game. And someone said, "Oh, look, there's an hour to go." And it was like, "Yeah, that we don't need it. We know who's won this game already." It wasn't just the score. It was just also the Reds just were not there, were they?
They weren't there. And every time they had the ball, they'd make an error or whatever. Whereas the Waratahs, when they had the ball, they nailed it. They put the stake in the ground and hammered it home. See what I did there? Waratah, put it in the ground, nailed. Waratah, sweet.
It's a flower. Oh dear, they grew throughout the game. The commentators blamed the rain in the second half, but I just think the Waratahs just took their foot off the pedal a little bit as well.
Oh look, we've seen it before. I mean, like, you know. I'm going to use All Blacks games, for example. This is game way back where I think playing the Wallabies, for example, Athletic Park, and the All Blacks put like 40 points on the Wallabies in the first half. But it's very hard. Again, it's a mental thing, is it, to keep that intensity, the accuracy and everything going for another 40 minutes is actually easy to say, but very difficult to do. It's just that very small percentage and, mental shift that happens. So, yeah.
Yep. And yes, condolences to Jordan Pataia, who lost his father this week. Thoughts go out to him and his family in that one. You're right. I mean, you do switch off a bit, even if not intentionally.
Exactly. It's not intentional at all.
Especially when they got a line-out maul and went to 45-0. There was just nothing left in that game.
No, there wasn't.
They did well and just kept the Reds at bay.
And then basically, I think in that second half, the rain came down a bit harder as well. And so it did actually become a lot more difficult in that second half. But then when they had the misty rain in the first half, it was like, you know, it was quite wet in that second half. That's what you always expect in Australia. It's always raining there. And it's just, yeah, the Reds, every time they tried to do something, basically just made an error.
Yeah, 18 penalties didn't help them losing a third of their lineouts didn't help them either. Yeah, they were awful.
You know, look, the Reds, after last week, they narrowly lost to the Brumbies, and you sort of think, shit, this is a good Reds side. But one thing that made them lose the game against the Brumbies and caused them problems from the outset in yesterday's game was their lineout. You know, what helped the Waratahs get their roll on in the first half was the dysfunctionality of the Reds' lineout. The chances the Reds had to basically get on, they got their throw in, so a chance to get the ball, hold the ball for a bit longer, and their lineout malfunctioned, and the Waratahs ended up with the ball again.
So the way the table looks now is that the Brumbies top the table on 18 points still. The Melbourne Rebels are 4 points behind on 14 points, three wins and no bonus points. The Waratahs jump up to third with 11 points, and the Reds also have 11 points as well. Western Force down the bottom there by two. So, yeah, all very tight. The first place goes straight through to the final. Second and third play a semi-final before going, and obviously the winner of that plays the top team in the finals. That's how that all, that's how the Super Rugby AU will finish. And then we had the
We'll finish.
That's the process of it finishing.
Oh, right. Sorry, my bad.
They've got a final series. Moving on then, the Crusaders versus the Highlanders. And boy, the Highlanders came out of the sheds and started at speed. Obviously, Arshin's not seen this one. I haven't seen this one.
But I was sort of like got an idea of what happened.
With Frizzell bashing over the Crusaders, then kept the ball alive. So basically, they avoided contact, and it looked a bit hare and scare them. But there's always a player that they could offload or give the ball to, even when they were going backwards without that. But that then, when they did get a contact, meant that the Highlanders' defence had not had any time to reset, and that's how they got the overlap and put some. Put it away. The Crusaders lost Moody early to an injury, and in the second half they lost a replacement prop on the other side to he went off on the stretcher. So we hope that he's okay. I've gone blank as to the guy's name. It's the Irish guy,
Ollie Yeager.
Yeah, Ollie Yeager. Thank you. Who had to go off on a stretcher. We wish him a speedy and full recovery from that. So they lost two props, one on each side this game. The Highlanders did take penalties at this point, but that was to put them back in the lead when it was 7-7. And to me, that's not such a bad idea, is to keep yourself ahead of the Crusaders.
On the surface of it, you're right. Okay, on the surface of it, you're right. But the problem you have, and it came to fruition in this game again, like many other games Crusaders play, is the fact is that at some stage they're going to score some tries. And it's great that you take the three to stay ahead, but you actually need to have a fatter margin. Because at some stage, the Crusaders are going to score some tries. So, yep, take the threes. But really, you still have to score tries against Crusaders to win the game. And I think just seeing the comments that I've seen for this game, basically it bears the truth again. After 50 minutes, the Highlanders in front 22-7, and they never scored any more points.
22-13, not 22-7.
Yep. Right.
And then after 53 minutes, didn't score again. The Crusaders added three tries in the last 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There, where basically the Highlanders really, and yeah, as he says, the Highlanders looked the better team for 60 minutes. Now, they did well in that 60 minutes, but Tomkinson putting his shoulder into Yeager and getting a yellow card for it. Really didn't help the cause at all.
Did he brace himself?
Yes.
See, I've got a, you know, this is like on Saturday night, we saw Logic take place over Law. And you have to say that in a situation. Pardon?
We saw the law being applied properly on Saturday night.
There you how do you say that? Why do you say that? There's a play. I mean, like we go back to Charlie Farmoina, I think, got penalised for a Lions player jumping in a tackle, and he tackled him in the air. And all the player was doing was jumping to catch the ball, not a kick, a pass. So we've seen it in the past where players have been penalised for exactly the same thing that Geordie Barrett did. I agree with the decision in the game, but we have seen players that have jumped and get tackled and it been ruled as being tackled in the air.
The difference here is that he in those the other examples you're doing, they're jumping to catch something, even if it's a pass or a, whereas this one he's carrying the ball and jumps and then jumps into the player. So it's different. He's actually carrying ball. You're not allowed to jump into a tackle.
Well, there's no law that says you can't jump into a tackle. There's no law that says that.
Well, we'll go away and have a look. I know, and this is one of these things that we've had before, is that there definitely used to be a law against it, because it can be a dangerous play. You're not allowed to hurdle a player.
Doesn't mean that because you're thinking of Vaia Fifita hurdling Piers Morgan.
Well, there's another lot of where people have jumped over. You're not allowed to jump over a tackle. Anyway, that's been sort of like that. I don't believe common sense. I think it was proper application of the law because he was carrying it and jumped to try and jump with a difference. But either way, the right decision was made.
But all I'm saying is, coming back to it, it's just like, now players need, you know, you're silly if you don't think that players aren't going to brace to protect themselves. As long as they're not intentionally trying to brace and throw a shoulder in, then there is a difference there. So, I mean, as I said, I haven't seen it. I'm just looking at the comments that have been made. And so basically, it's just bracing because there was going to be an impact. And that's logical. That's what anybody's going to do.
So there's a... He did step into the player, though, which is slightly different.
Right, okay, okay, yep.
So the so to me, yeah, I was happy with the yellow card. If I could understand it being called red because he did make contact with the head, I think red would have been harsh, and so I'm happy with that. Yes, he needed the yellow there. What was being described by the commentator was that he was in a position to make a tackle if the offload happened and was trying to and the offload didn't happen. Now, to me, he can see the offload's not happening and then still moves towards the player, and he is bracing as well. I think he could have stepped in a different direction. But anyway, that's a personal. These are all split second things that the players are having to make. So hence why I was happy with yellow rather than red.
Red.
What about the other one where yellow card versus the Canes versus the Chiefs, where the player got thrown down in wrestling move?
That was like he wasn't a red.
I was going to say that was red.
But that was red. That actually was red. Yeah. Because he's actually landed on his head as well. He's lucky he's landed sideways on his head rather than up and down vertically on his head. That was a red card, if it ever was a red card. Because you can apply the law book. Precisely, you know, it's like, did X happen? Did Y happen? Did Z happen? Are there any mitigating circumstances? Well, there weren't any. He's picked them up by the leg and thrown them. So there wouldn't have been any mitigating circumstances. So that was a red all day long.
Yep. Did not. Yeah. There was. Did he bring the player down in a controlled manner? No.
Yeah. No.
Was it reckless? Absolutely.
So he dodged one. He dodged the bullet there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to go around that one. But thank you for the reminder of that one. Who's somewhere in there? Gavin. Yep.
Gezza.
It was interesting. Well, because you're saying, don't take three. But I mean, the Crusaders were taking threes in this game, which was a surprise. Yep. Which showed.
different thing though, isn't it? It's just like the fact is that the Crusaders know or have confidence in themselves that we're just going to blow them off the park in the last 20 minutes. So we doesn't matter. We'll stay in touch. Just staying because we'll score 3-4 tries in the last 20. So it's all sweet. Different mindset for the way that the Crusaders play and the confidence that they have, etc. You're the Highlanders. You just need to build flat. You're playing the Crusaders next week. The Blues playing. They need it. They need to build fat. It's like, as I say, if the penalty is in front of the sticks, at the 22, take the 3. But if it's out, you know, further out, you're going to kick to the corners. You need to score the tries.
So Ashwin there is comparing rugby to a bear hibernating for winter in the last 20 minutes.
Got to eat the salmon. When the salmon's on offer, you got to flick it out with the paw.
Oh, dearie me. A couple of things here. I mean, look, the Josh Mackay, a couple of fantastic tackles to save things, stopping Bryn Hall from scoring just short of the line.
I saw a replay of that one. Yeah, that was funny.
And then Hall got hooked straight after that play. Poor lad. Did he get hooked because of that? I don't think so. I think that they were already warming up his replacement. But he got hooked straight afterwards. Joshuani had a fantastic game in this one. A couple of real good breaks. Really showing the skills that he's got and why, as soon as he's come back, they put him in at 10 and moved Hunt back to 15, even though Mitch Hunt was actually playing pretty well at 10 when Joshuani was injured.
No, was he? I think Joshuani's been able to take it to a different level, though.
Oh, absolutely. But Hunt wasn't playing particularly badly. Hunt didn't do anything to say, you have to drop me and find a replacement quick.
Yep. This is like
when Josh came in, it was like, okay, yeah, we know you're that much better. In you go. Yep.
But that's like the Hurricanes, right? In terms of if they're missing a piece of the puzzle, they need a first five. Jackson Garden Basham isn't doing badly. It's just the fact is that, you know, you could set that back line even more alight if they had somebody with, that was a Ioane. Sort of thing, or Bowden.
Aaron Smith is playing really well. You've got to say he's having a really good season.
Hey, did we see the Badger hairdo today?
No.
Oh, did Aaron Smith play the 80?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I wouldn't call it a badge. I think it's more of a lion. But anyway, that's...
Well, we're not going to go into haircuts again this week.
We're going too far into haircuts again. Jesse Parity. Oh, dear. I thought a few... Some comments were a little bit harsh about him, but yeah, he didn't have a good game when he came on.
Who's that?
Jesse Parity.
I was shocked when the Highlanders actually picked him up at the start of the season, to tell you the truth. I mean, when we're talking the original Super Rugby and that squad, and it's just like, to me, he's a liability. He's always been, you know, it's just like he comes on the field and he's a bit of a hothead. He seems to have calmed down on giving reds and yellow cards away. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, at the end of the, when you're looking at this level of rugby that you're playing, you need people that can keep their cool. You lose your cool, you lose your calm. It's going to come through into your game.
Yeah.
So I think they've got enough quality players in their back row. I mean, I know they've been using him as a lock, and maybe they are short a bit on locks there down in Highlander country. But not for me, Jesse Parity.
Yeah, had a couple of injuries down there in the locks, unfortunately. Shannon Frizzell, also had a really good game as well. He's really coming like leaps and bounds, which means it's really interesting. Issues now for the All Black selectors around the back row stocks. There's a whole bunch of players that are not established All Blacks that are putting up their hand. Hosking Satutu.
What are you talking about, dude? What are you talking? Cornflakes has told you. Just put the Highlanders team in black jerseys, man. We know this.
But yeah, so there's a whole bunch of young lots. Callum Grace, Hoskins Tutu, another couple who are putting their hands up. So yeah, so really going to be difficult selecting that All Blacks, and that North-South game could be an absolute cracker. On the Crusaders side, well, hey, Sever Reese, wow. Didn't he try and chase down Nariki, but couldn't quite catch him. So that's a good foot race if you want to see one. Because, I mean, Nariki is quick, but say Sever Reese got pretty close on that one. A Bridge also showed his worth. Luke Romano, the old fella, comes on a wonderful offload. Had also a decent game.
And the old fella comes off. That's nice.
The don't worry, he's only half the age of us. He's not that. He's at least a decade younger than we are. And Richard Mwanga definitely ran things as per usual in there. Congratulations to the Crusaders for winning Super Rugby Aotearoa and picking up that wonderful trophy that has been made specifically for this tournament. We've already discussed the tackle on the prop or the shoulder to the prop. Yeah, it was more a brace. I could understand if it was red, but we've already talked about it. I think it was happy with yellow. So congratulations. No break dancing. I didn't stick around to watch the post-match stuff. So no break dancing, I believe, by Razor yet.
No, they did a haka.
They did, yes, the Crusaders now did their haka. Haka. All the Super Rugby sides have now got one since the British Lions. Lions came in.
Lions. So,
how much practice they put into that, because they only do it like once a year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, mind you, they know that it's coming up, that they get an opportunity to do it, so they probably practiced it. No, I was just going to say, with the trophy, you know, in some great comments, you know, in the social media around the trophy, and it's just like a logical thing. It's if once Super Rugby does return to normal or some form of normal or new competition, whatever, to utilise that Super Rugby Aotearoa trophy as like a Ranfurly Shield type scenario where you play at home and you're trying to take it off the defender at home sort of thing. So, I mean, you got the winner in Crusaders and they're holding it. They're the first holders of it. And so next season, if we don't have Super Rugby Aotearoa, because if we do, we have the same trophy. But if we don't and we move into a wider expanded Super Rugby competition, whether it's the Sanzar one or whether it's some new one, it's just like it'd be great to have that as a challenge thing. So when you play the holder at home, that's up for grabs. I think it'd be an awesome
concept. Like, a bit like a minor premiership. So have a little table.
No. The challenge, the Ranfurly Shield type concept. We love the Ranfurly Shield concept in New Zealand.
Well, yes, I know you do, because you've also got the Chiefs Cup, which is just between the provinces with it that are within the Chiefs area that they play for, both for the men's and the women's. The women can win it in the Farrah Palmer Cup, and the men can then lose it and have to then defend it in the Mighty Sen Cup. So.
Yeah, that sounds technical, dude. I've had too many beers for that.
Folks, look, tomorrow night at 8 p.m., we'll be back with the Driving Maul show. So, yeah, Monday nights, 8 p.m. is the Driving Maul show. And, yes, we've had Rugby Australia come out and say there's a red line that we're drawing in our blood, which says we're not having less than five teams. New Zealand Rugby, go away and rethink about what kind of competition you would like. That's something I think we'll be discussing on the show tomorrow night. Also, we'll be talking about the club rugby, you know, particularly those club rugby in the north part of the North Island. Where was that? Eden versus Papitoto. This weekend, and Stephen was at Ponies or Ponsonby versus Marist.
And for those people who are from outside of Auckland saying, oh, what about us? It's like, well, we need some people to go to games in your region. So drop Paul a message and, yeah, we'll, you'll talk about them as well, won't you?
Yep, also absolutely. And if you'd like to do videos, post-match interviews from your games, and let us have them to put up on the New Zealand Sports Radio Facebook page, more than happy to do that as well. So please, please do that. We do get a submission in from Waikato of a roundup of their games that we try and fit into the show if we have time. If not, we put the video up on our Facebook page as well. So yes.
We'll have to get Lane going around the counties games. Yeah. Paramahoe. Is he Paramahoe in Bombay? What's the result?
So Lane, yeah, if you'd like to do that, do get in touch. Clearly Ashwin knows who you are on there.
He's Rohit's mate.
So we'll be talking about that as well. We'll have looking at having the same sort of Boa on, if you've been watching from the last or Bo on from the last week again, who is part of the Manukau Rovers, discussing that as well. And hopefully we'll have Dwayne, who is the current Samoan number 9 international player. So do join us tomorrow at 8 p.m. for the Driving More show. And I'll be back at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning with the morning sports briefing. We help you start your day the best way, up to speed with all the important sports news every single day at 7 a.m. So, and if you can't catch us at that time, how about listening to the podcast on the go? Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio on iCast, Acast, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Thank you, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.